The history of scientific interest in synesthesia has gone through many vicissitudes. In the early 19th century, when Keats and Shelley and other poets used extravagant intersensory images and metaphors, it seemed that synesthesia was no more than a poetic or imaginative conceit. Then came a series of careful psychological studies in the 1860s and 1870s, culminating in Galton's Inquiries into Human Faculty and Its Development in 1883. These served to legitimate the phenomenon and were soon followed by the introduction of the word synesthesia. Towards the end of the 19th century, with Rimbaud and the symbolist poets, the notion of synesthesia again seemed a poetic conceit, and it ceased to be regarded as a subject for scientific investigation. This changed yet again in the last third of the 20th century, as John Harrison details in his excellent book, Synesthesia, The Strangest Thing. In the 1980s, Richard Cytowick made the first neurophysiological studies of synesthetic subjects, studies that, for all their technical limitations, seemed to show a genuine activation of different sensory areas in the brain, for example, auditory and visual, coincident with synesthetic experiences. In 1989, he published a pioneering text, Synesthesia, A Union of the Senses, and this was followed by a popular exploration of the subject in 1993, The Man Who Tasted Shapes. Current techniques of functional brain imaging now give unequivocal evidence for the simultaneous activation or coactivation of two or more sensory areas of the cerebral cortex in synesthetes, just as Cytowick's work had predicted. While Cytowick was investigating synesthesia in the United States, Simon Baron Cohen and John Harrison were opening up the subject in England, and in 1997 they published a review volume, Synesthesia, Classic and Contemporary Readings. Galton believed that genuine synesthesia was strongly familial, and Harrison and Baron Cohen noted that a third of their subjects reported close relatives who also had synesthesia. Nabokov, in his autobiography, Speak, Memory, wrote of how as a child he saw all the letters of the alphabet as having distinct colors, and was deeply upset when he was given a box of colored letters and found that nearly all of them were the wrong color. His mother, also a synesthete, agreed with him that the colors were wrong, but not on what they should be. Nabokov's wife, too, was a synesthete, as is their son. While synesthesia has been regarded as quite rare, affecting perhaps one person in 2,000, and to have a strong gender preference, with a female-to-male ratio of about 6-1, a recent study by Julia Simner, Jamie Ward, and their colleagues has brought both of these suppositions into question. Using a random population of almost 1,700 subjects and objective tests to separate genuine from pseudo-synesthesia, they found that one person in 23 had some kind of synesthesia, most commonly for colored days, and that there was no significant gender difference. Prior to 1999, there were no objective psychological tests for synesthesia. But in the past few years, V.S. Ramachandran and E.M. Hubbard have brought great experimental ingenuity to the testing of this. In order to distinguish true synesthesia from pseudo-synesthesia, for example, they have devised tests that only a genuine synesthete can pass. One such test, described in their 2001 paper in the Journal of Consciousness Studies, presents the subject with a medley of rather similar-looking twos and fives, all printed in black. The ordinary person would be hard put to distinguish these at a glance, but a color number synesthete can distinguish them easily by their different colors. Functional brain imaging has now confirmed that there is activation of visual areas, especially color processing areas, in synesthetes when they see colors in response to speech or music. There is little room for doubt anymore as to the physiological as well as the psychological reality of synesthesia. Synesthesia seems to go with an unusual degree of cross-activation between what, in most of us, are functionally independent areas of the sensory cortex, Such cross-activation could be based on an anatomical excess of neural connections between different areas of the brain. There is some evidence that such hyperconnectivity is indeed present in primates and other mammals during fetal development and early infancy, but is reduced or pruned within a few weeks or months after birth.